Hey, welcome to Youth Force Chronicles, the podcast for teens by teens, where we learn about jobs and careers. Today, we are interviewing Orain Williams. What does he do? Let's find out.
Are you ready?
All right. Thank you, Doc. That was an amazing interview. Hey, guys. Crazy J here. And we are, in case you haven't noticed, we are short-staffed today. It's a Christmas season, and all of our kids are out doing their Christmas stuff. And so Doc is going to be, holding the fort down, I guess it's called, right?
I guess so, yeah.
So, like we said, this is Youth Force Chronicles, This is Youth Force Chronicles, the podcast for teens by teens about jobs and careers, where we just love to interview people who are just in their jobs and careers. And it just varies from anything. And today's guest is a motivational speaker, among an author, and much other things. Doc, go ahead and introduce our guest.
Today's guest is Orain Williams.
Hey, welcome to the podcast, Orain. Thank you for joining us. Hey, so our first thing that we do is usually fun facts about ourselves and about everybody. And so we would like to share a fun fact about each other, and then we would like to hear one about you. A fun fact about me is I cry at Muppet movies. Like Muppet movies, yeah, they get me every time.
Any specific Muppet movie or just all of them?
Just any, like when Elmo tweeted everybody back in the, like a few months ago, and was like, how's everyone doing? And I was an emotional wreck.
I'm Muppets fan?
Well, I think it's just more of the, anything in that realm kind of makes me sob, but Muppet movies, the Muppets in Space one was the weirdest one though, because, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the Muppets in Space, but it's when Gonzo figures out that he's an alien. Did you ever see that one?
No, I didn't. I think the other day was the first time I watched a Muppet movie.
Which one did you watch?
The Christmas Carol.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
Yeah, it's the first time I've seen a Muppets movie.
Really?
I didn't realize it until after we were watching it. And I was like, whoa, I've never seen one of these.
Who's your favorite? Do you have a favorite Muppet at all?
Great question. Maybe, I'll say Big Bird. You know, it's the most popular ones.
Yeah. Big Bird, this is a fun fact about, I'm going to give you another fun fact here real quick. So Big Bird, do you know the way that Big Bird works is that the guy has to walk around like this the whole time?
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I couldn't do that either. But yeah, it's nuts. I'm a big Henson and Disney person, so.
Oh, gotcha.
Doc, what do you got? What's your fun fact?
Yeah, I was saying last episode that I got to do this so many times, so I better save my good ones.
Yeah, you do.
No. A fun fact about me. I would say a fun fact about me is that I don't know which ones I've given already. I think I've said this before, but I play piano for a lot of local churches, and I've even said so to a couple gigs.
Piano connoisseur, essentially.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's pretty cool.
Awesome. But I know how to play the piano, but nobody's hiring me to do it. I'm not that good like you, Doc.
Yeah, I can't play the piano either. So I can play the guitar a little bit, but that's about it.
We should do a thing.
Yeah, we could do. I don't know. I don't have any songs off the top of my head, but Free Bird is pretty much. I'm just kidding. I wish I could play.
Mary Had a Little Lamb.
I didn't think I could do that. I could do the dueling banjos for a little part, but
okay.
That I could do a duet one episode.
Little duet. So what about you, Mr. Williams?
So fun fact about me is I am a dual citizen. So I'm an American citizen and a citizen of Jamaica.
Okay.
And I have three licenses. So I have a driver's license, a boating license, and a motorcycle license.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool. What part of, I don't know in reference to, but I'm just going to ask you, what part of Jamaica are you from?
So both my parents are from Jamaica. They're from not the popular tourist cities, but my mom is from a city called Clarendon, and my dad is from the parish of Clarendon. So in the islands, states are called parishes. And then my dad is from the parish of St. Elizabeth.
Okay. All right.
How do you come about being a dual citizen? Like, how do you get citizenship in both?
That's a great question. So some countries will allow descendants to get citizenship. So,
okay.
So for example, in Jamaica, you can go as far back as your grandparent. So if your grandparent, you can prove that they were Jamaican born, you can get citizenship, you know, provide some documentation, fill out some paperwork, and so on.
That's so interesting.
So when you like fill out any like official government forms, do you have to provide that information? This is a weird question, but I'm just curious. I've never had those.
I only utilize it when it's to my benefit. So other than that, it's just typically, you know, just still an American citizen. But so, for example, when I travel there, I'll travel with my Jamaican passport and I'll go in the very, very short, quick line where people go in so I could get like in a lot faster. And it's Jamaica is a part of a collection of countries called CARICOM. So when I go to CARICOM nations, I can use my passport there as well and go in as if I'm a citizen of that country and get in a little quicker than the tourists.
Well,
it's a good idea. I got to track my lineage and see if I can get another passport.
Did you know that you could go to the Department of History here, at least in our town, you could go to the Department of History or whatever, and they'll give you free ancestral, ancestral. Wow. Yeah, that's, I don't fact check me because I'm just hearing this, but it sounds legit because everyone, you know, they want to know where you're from and everything.
You should go try it.
Yeah.
Sure.
You should. Where did you grow up? And like, it was not in Jamaica, was it?
No. So I was born in New Jersey, grew up in New Jersey, lived in New Jersey all my life for the time being. But now I travel.
Are the drones flying around right now? Over a year about that?
I haven't been looking for them, but it is the talk of the news, talk of social media.
Doug, have you seen them?
I don't believe I know what you're talking about.
So there's these drones flying around in New Jersey and no one knows where, like what they're doing. Like they don't know.
Yeah,
they don't know.
They're just flying them. They're flying for extended periods of times, like 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. No one's seeing where they're taking off from, landing.
Are they just random old drones, or are they like?
I think they're bigger than what you might be used to. Yeah.
Big drones shaped in the circle.
No, I don't think they're. It could be. No one seems to know. But like,
who knows?
Weird. Yeah. Is it just like, are people like throwing stuff at them up there? Have you heard anybody do that?
They're taking videos. I don't know if they could throw that high up because I heard they're maybe like the top of a tree. Some are saying they're flying that low, like treetop line.
Dang. That's kind of scary. It reminds me of these videos I see on TikTok where these guys are in their car and they're flying over people and like just calling them out and I don't know if they're doing things that are, you know, not appropriate or whatever, but like, you know, like they're on the street and then they're screaming at them and everyone runs away. It's really funny. They have like a speaker attached to it and they're like one of those prank things. It's ridiculous, but people with no time on their hands, or a lot of time on their hands, like, it's crazy.
I had kind of a similar thing happen to me. I was just sitting at my house, and I was alone, and it was dark, and I just saw this little light go right above my backyard, and I thought I was about to get abducted until I looked over, and it started going back towards our neighbor's house.
A drone or landed. A van?
No, yeah, it was a drone. It was in the air. If it was a van, then that was very impressive, but... I'm pretty sure it was a drone.
Oh, that's funny. Well, we're going to get to our next portion of the show here. So we usually do like some sort of game. It's like usual truth and lie or whatever, but there's one that I don't think we've ever really played. And to kind of get into our conversation that we're going to have about what you do for a living, was there any significant event three significant events that maybe inspired you or shaped you to choose your line of work, like in high school, in those formidable years?
Okay, so high school specifically, there was a time I had a substitute teacher, and she kind of brought out in me that she saw me as a leader. And I probably, that was probably a first moment that I ever thought of myself as a leader. And in high school, I think at that time, I kind of wanted to do computer engineering. That was very, very popular subject at that time of the year. We're talking early 2000s. Well, even before 2000, actually, you know, Y2K was happening. I know Doc is like, what is Y2K?
I remember where I was. I remember I was running down the street to my mom's, like they had a friend. And on that night, my mom called me. She's like, I want you to get down here just in case. And so I was running right down the road at the count of midnight. And I got there right before the ball dropped. It was nuts. I just wanted to share that story.
Wasn't that the time whenever it was turning the year 2000 that a bunch of people thought that like the world was going to end?
Well, yeah, that the computers were going to like turn against us or something. I can't even really remember what it was.
Well, it had something to do with like the computers, trees to the year 2000. Something like that. I don't even remember. But yeah, this is just kind of dating us.
Go ahead. Go with your story, though.
And then probably fast forward after college, I read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And after reading that, I think that really helped me want to talk to young people about some of the things I speak on now. So I would say those two events.
Have you read that book, Doc? Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
No, it's on my list.
You should read it because like it'll totally change your perspective on a lot of stuff. Some of the things that I remember from that book was talking about how the industrial age and now we're going into the technology age and like the whole workforce development is kind of like in this weird, like we see it every day with us because we have these trades that people want them to do, but then there's all this technical jobs that are coming up like AI and all that stuff. And so it's an interesting book and I suggest any young kids read it. So
yeah, absolutely.
I'll have to throw that on the list. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already there. Yeah.
It's already there.
Got to move it up the list.
You're
going to move it up the list.
So what you read it tonight, like go home and read it.
Read it during Christmas break. Okay.
Yeah, it's a weekend read. You can get it done.
Yeah, I'm sure my mom probably has it. She has the whole Library of Congress in our house. So,
so you had the teacher, right? The substitute teacher kind of inspiring you to. One thing I've noticed with the kids that we work with most of the time is sometimes we see the potential and the leadership in them, but they refuse to
see it in themselves, right? And they may not see it in themselves, and I think that was something for me. I don't want to say I was ever the loudest in the room or the quietest in the room, but you know, she just saw something in me that I couldn't see in myself, and that happens a lot with young people. So yeah, I kind of took heed to that advice, and
yeah, that's really awesome.
That's good, Doc. Do you have anybody in your life right now that's kind of like molding you and pushing you in a direction that you maybe are like kind of dragging your feet a little bit?
That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, there's the obvious in my family.
Mm-hmm.
My family keeps me going most of the time. But I don't know if there's a specific mentor out of just my family. Of course, you guys are awesome.
I wasn't fishing for that, but... So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to start, but I want you to talk. I want you to have the questions to ask him. Okay.
Gotcha.
Like, get to talk. So how did you get into, like, what was your moment that you maybe started to believe in yourself at that leadership role and then started going in the direction that you're in now?
So, freshman year of college, I actually got involved in student government. Something I never did before during high school. I was in a couple clubs in high school, but never took on any leadership role. I don't even know why I decided to take on a leadership role in student government. But, you know, I ran for vice president of my freshman class and I won and, you know, got heavily involved on campus. And it got me meeting, you know, when you're involved in student government, you get to, you know, you meet the faculty people and the president and so on and so forth. And then I started being a part of, maybe not freshman year, but maybe like later on in college, being a part of different panels when students would come visit campus, you know, like admissions office would ask me, hey, we want you to come sit on the panel and talk to kids about, you know, college life and so on and so forth. So I enjoy doing that, you know, just talking to people who are, you know, a few years younger than me and just helping to give my perspective on my experiences thus far with college and in the school I was going to. And then after, you know, then after I graduated and I read the book, and I decided I wanted to talk to more young people about money and about real estate, I just reached out to an organization I was a part of as a high school student. I thought that was the perfect place to start because I came from that program, and I don't think they turned me down and say no. So it was a program ran by Delta Sigma Theta sorority. They had have a program called Delta Teen. And I just reached out to one of the advisors and said, hey, I want to come talk to the kids about money. And that was like my very first big workshop or, you know, me getting in front of, well, I mean, I've been in front of groups as a panel. It's different when you have other people speaking, but just me by myself giving my presentation.
That's wild.
At the local libraries.
Yeah. We have a program that we teach I'm going to be transparent with you. This is one of the hardest sells for my job, because when we started this program, we wanted to have my CEO, Derek Kinsey, is very into investing and the importance of teaching kids about investing. And so it is a very hard sell because we've been trying to teach the kids investing. So we have like a YouTube videos that are going to come out that are called Raising Up Millionaires. And there's a class that we teach, and it's to show the kids that the importance of investing and stuff. But it is a hard sell to tell a teenager who is over at our teen center playing video games. They need to come over and learn about investing and money and stuff. And so I commend you for stepping out, because they need it. You know, I need it and everything. So, but yeah, like that's wild. So when you first got your gig, what was your first thought was it like an imposter syndrome type thing or?
No, it was just more so. So I really try to focus on the foundational stuff. Like I touch on investing, but I break it down as basic as, you know, how do we even earn money? Like I'm not going into the history of money and things like
sure.
that. Like, how do we earn money, right? Legal ways that we earn money. And then, you know, well, what to do with it, where to put it, and how the banks work and what kind of different accounts there are. Just things of that. I even remember, I haven't done this in a while, just showing students how to write a check. Because, Doc, have you wrote a check before? Like, if you have to write a check for Pates or something, could you do so?
I have not written one myself.
Yeah, but I mean, just those basic things. Because I think, like, you know, similar to a house, right? If the foundation is bad, the rest of the house at some point may come on, right? So I like to just really focus and teach those basic fundamental stuff. So
the walls,
right? So they could build upon that knowledge.
That's yeah. Great. That's good. That's good. So you teach them essentially the four walls of, like, protect those four walls at all costs kind of deal?
Yeah, the four walls.
Yeah.
I'm going to
So you do these presentations, like, where? Is it local, or do some people come ask you to go some other places? Or
so I've traveled different places and given some presentations. I've gone down to, like, I've done a conference at Clemson University.
Go Tigers.
I've spoken internationally before. So yeah, anywhere that I can, you know, spread my message and you know, build my business, I'm willing to go.
Yeah, it's really,
you know, we have virtual opportunities as well. You know,
So do you have like digital products that you sell, like essentially like a course or something?
No, I don't develop some digital products though.
Like, well, we can help.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I need to jot that down.
Yeah.
Well, soon. Being in front of the audience.
Yeah.
As best I can. Nothing like personal touch. It's an energy.
The connection is what is what we long for, and we don't realize that we want it until it's not there, right?
Yeah, that's a good point though. What kind of have you made certain like connections that have like is there a specific person that you've been influenced by or that you have influenced that have really grown with you or helped you grow or you helped them? Is there any sort of story like that?
Yeah, so I have a couple. I call them some virtual mentors. Like maybe I don't meet with them regularly, but maybe I just keep in touch with them or I follow their journey and I'm learning from them based on things they do or tips they've given. I have mentors such as Principal Kapele, Eric Thomas, Sharif James. Those are some, you know, people I look up to based on what they've been doing. And I try to not emulate them, but just learn from them. You know, I want to learn from people who are doing amazing things that I've seen. And I try to be a great example in front of any audience that I'm in front of. For example, I'm in a classroom 2 days out the week with a new client. And one of the students, like, he asked for my LinkedIn to connect with me, you know, virtually. I always share my LinkedIn with my audience and other mediums, but like, we connected on LinkedIn. And then the next time I saw him in class, I'm like, hey, man, we got to beef up your LinkedIn profile because you don't have a picture. You don't have anything on there. So, like, I told him that's your homework for the next, by the time I come see you the next class, I want to see something on there because I think he's a junior, but I think that's cool to see younger people developing some presence on a professional platform like that because you can look at it like an online portfolio for yourself when you go to apply for college, want to do maybe an internship or something. You can have a place to reference because sometimes you may not remember all the cool stuff that you've done that you might want to speak to when you're having an interview or if you're looking for some volunteer opportunity. You can use that as your virtual portfolio for yourself, you know. Oh, this weekend I got to feed the homeless at the local shelter or something, and, you know, or whatever case may be, just because you may not have a job per se. So, for example, Doc, you could have on yours, you know, podcast hosts of Youth Chronicles, you know, have that up there, you know, put clips from an episode or whatever the case may be. But yeah. I think it's great to see, you know, high school students, you know, getting on there and trying to build connections with people.
Yeah, Doc is part of our, we have a program right now that we are capable of being able to pay students to partner with like different businesses. So like Doc is unique in the sense that he can be a part of the podcast, but he also has like a job that he goes to.
Great.
And I'm not entirely sure what he does, but it's, what is it called?
We're a local panel shop. So we wire electrical panels for big factories.
There you go.
It's pretty sick. I don't really know.
That's what you do with it. Yeah.
I don't know what the official job title is. I was there for almost a year.
Yeah.
I still didn't know because every time, and every single person in there does a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool to see because the person I'm working under does a different thing than the person to the desk right next to him versus the guy across the room. And so, yeah, it's very interesting because.
And you're getting some cool hands on experience with that, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
That's the awesome part about that part of our program is that we get to kind of like let them go out. And the cool thing is too, is that they get to, we've had a couple kids who have kind of flubbed up and we've had to displace them, but that doesn't follow them. You know, like if you and me were to like get a job and we mess up and then we get fired for it. Right. Then that kind of, we have to put that on a resume, but now they kind of use us as a shield. And if they get displaced, well, they come and they come close with us. And then Joe, and who is our program director, Mr. Joe, we kind of mentor them a little bit more and kind of like, hey, let's work through this. What was the main issue? You know, maybe it was like being late or maybe it was just like poor communication or whatever. And so we're able to kind of like help them get better. And then we could send them out to another company maybe the next term or whatever. So
learning experience, you know, I've been let go from jobs before, not necessarily for anything. Well, one time it was maybe bad, I was terminated, but it's a learning experience. It's a part of life.
Yeah.
It's one of our questions.
What was it?
I was fired from a job this year as well, but that was a budgetary reason. So.
Sure. Yeah. So one of our questions is what was like your worst job that you ever had?
The worst job, I was a bus boy at Red Lobster. So, you know, you got to clean up the tables. And I remember one time, you know, a customer, they vomited on the floor. And I was like, I'm not cleaning.
It's a hazmat job.
I'm not cleaning it up. But, yeah, that was probably my second job ever. You know, I was still in high school. So busing tables, making a little. I got a wage, but you know, sometimes waiters or waitresses will give me some tip money as well. But one perk from the job was I always got to eat the biscuits at it. Over. Gotta love the Cheddar Bay biscuits at Red Lobster.
Wow, yes, that's
I don't know. I think that would mostly weigh out the bad.
What do you mean?
Cheddar Bay biscuits?
Yeah, but like I don't think you've worked in customer service before. It's like like, yeah, you have a really like a lot of good days, but man, when you get those bad day people, you remember those people. I worked at Publix for 4 years of high school, and there people get mad about the dumbest stuff, and like it's just customer service is a wonderful career to get into, but you have to also be cut for it too. Like, it's just madhouse sometimes, like dealing with throughout. I could tell stories about stuff I've dealt with at Publix of all places, right? And like the things that people coming in and getting mad about, like, you know, I'd never squash anybody's bread. I'd pride myself and I was a good bagger boy, but it was just, working in customer service is tough.
You know what's really tough? Another job I had that probably at the bottom is I was a telemarketer. So the person who would call your phone that you really wasn't expecting a call from. And what we were selling was, I want to say, roofing and siding.
Oh, gosh.
I kind of set schedules like, hey, would you want a free estimate on a new roof? And so, matter of fact, one of those people called me yesterday. But, yeah, I was calling. Exactly. And you get people who would curse at you. They'll hang up on you. Well, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, I have tough skin for that.
Oh yeah, like dealing with bed. I used to work in psych as a psych ward, or not a psych. Oh, but used to work in a psych ward.
Really,
as a psych tech. Yeah, and like that was like one of the funnest jobs I had, just because of the clientele and the unique story. I mean, we had one guy that was like pretending that the unit was the Starship Enterprise, and he would talk to the fire alarm and be like, "This is Captain Kirk to the deck. Please open the bay door." It's a sit down, get over here. So
okay, did I just miss this?
Well, I haven't.
Incredible piece of lore that I've never heard.
There's a lot, but I mean, there's a lot of comparisons to what I do now, because I've always worked with kids or older people, and then there was that time in my life, which was, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We had, it was in the hospital. So like, but I did get to like, you know, talk about helping people. I got to like kind of be that person for them a little bit when they would come in and having their back. Cause they knew they had the people that were like almost, you know, they're having a really bad day and some sad thoughts, and they just get the best of them. And so like, I got to kind of encourage people and stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun, but that's a whole other kind of customer service. Like,
so you had stories every day.
Yeah. So you said you do some traveling. What's like the furthest place you traveled?
Furthest place distance wise, I've traveled to Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates. So that's over. So I went to Abu Dhabi and Dubai.
That's cool.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I've always wanted to.
How'd you get that big?
So funny, it was several years ago, Christmas Eve night, there was what we call in the travel world a glitch fare, meaning the airlines released tickets at a super duper discount. The ticket was like less than $300. And I jumped on it so fast. And I asked a friend if he wanted to go. He thought it was not legit, not real. So he passed on it. But I went with some other friends, and a lot of people went that year, and it was awesome to get to go to that to that country, that region of the world. I've never been that far. That was the longest airline flight I ever took, and it was beautiful. It was a great trip.
Oh, so it was. I thought you would got a gig there to speak. So you just
I thought you just meant travel.
No, this is more interesting. So you just said, you know what? I'm gonna go. Like, this is going.
Because I wanted to go, and you know, when you see a price like that you just can't pass up, I had to jump on it.
You go there, and what's the draw? Like, you know, Orlando has Disney World.
The draw is, I think everything is.
Eyes.
No, I don't.
Oh my goodness.
So go ahead.
Yeah, so everything is super amplified there. When I mean super amplified, like huge buildings, beautiful. The mall there, they have butlers to carry your bags and like drive you around in like a cart. Yeah, you tip them. They have like an aquarium in the mall. They have a theme park called I think it's called Ferrari World. I didn't go there, but
Ferrari.
No. They have
Yeah, it's pretty sick. They've broken a lot.
It's a roller coaster that just
there's a roller coaster and really fast. I didn't go there. They have dune surfing, like you're in the desert and you could like ride ATVs or you could like snowboard on the sand kind of thing. A lot of beautiful buildings and so on and so forth. I mean, they have taxis that are like Mercedes Benzes and so on and so forth. Yeah, those are just taxis over there. It's a very rich region.
But was it cheap? Like was the currency?
Oh, over there. I can't remember because it was like maybe 10 years ago. But some things can be expensive over there. But I mean, I got over there and I got there. But yeah, I don't think I spent like a lot of money over there. But yeah, things can be a little bit more expensive over there. And then it's, you know, in that region, you have to keep in mind just what are some of the cultural differences that you got to be aware of when you're traveling to certain parts of the world. And you got to remember you're not in America, so you don't have those privileges. And there's people who have gotten into trouble because they think they're in America and they can do or say whatever they want. But, you know, you can't do those things. So you always got to be conscious of that wherever you travel to. It's just, what are the cultural norms? You know, what are some of the laws that they have that you might think are ridiculous, but you got to be respectful of where you are.
Mm-hmm. Where's the furthest you ever traveled?
Furthest I've ever traveled? It's just Montana. I haven't been out of the country yet.
Do you have your passport, Doc?
Not yet. I'm going to get it soon.
We got a ticket for you right now.
I'm heading out to Guatemala over the summer, though. There you go.
That's the first place you want to go. Nice. Why? Why Guatemala, Doc?
It's our church has a mission trip there, so we're going to be able to go. And I think we have like 40 people going this year, so we're going to be able to go down there. And
they go and build like houses and stuff. Our VP goes to the same church, and so he goes all the time, and then they build like schools and whatever, and
yeah, and they have
like
they
hard work. Like,
last time they went, they brought an eye doctor with them, so they got set up a little eye clinic for people that don't usually get prescription glasses and stuff. So some people can't even see, and
that's so cool. I've been to Egypt and Haiti.
Oh, nice. I want to go to Haiti.
And when you were talking about Dubai, when you're talking about like the theme park, I was thinking, it was like, we went to this, like, this is the most discount theme park I've ever been to. Like, I felt so bad because the lady was like, you want to get on the rides? And I'm like, no, thank you. I'm either going to die or catch something because of the maintenance on them. And just, I mean, I think it was like one of the Ferris wheels, like the dude was like pushing it. So he had to push it with his hands.
Oh my God.
And then they had the swings, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to, but Egypt was fun, and Haiti was even fun. Haiti, this, you know, it's third world country. And so that's an experience in itself. And so was that kind of where Dubai was? But Dubai is like
Dubai as first world.
Dubai is like Tomorrowland.
Wait, was that the city in the what was it? The Mission Impossible.
Yes, there was. Was it a no? It was a. There was a Fast and Furious, and they were in Dubai one time when the car they were driving a car. They were like in a skyscraper, and I drove it out the window, or something like that. Yeah. That was a Fast and Furious.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think I remember that one. Yeah. So traveling to third world countries, I'm always encouraging people to do that because it'll help you keep some perspective. And what makes you kind of I'm taking this question, but what kind of keeps you in perspective here?
Here in life or in America?
Well, just like, you know, like what kind of keeps you grounded, I guess, is the question.
Oh, I think I just come from humble beginnings. You know, both my parents migrated here from Jamaica, you know, to build a family, to give their kids a better life. And I'm just grateful for the opportunities that I've had. Not to say that I've had everything in life or anything like that, but, you know, I'm just humbled to be able to do the things I enjoy doing, get to go places who there's, you know, I've been to Dubai, rich country. I've been to third world countries as well. And I think, you know, I just appreciate the things I have because there's people who have so little and, you know, obviously there's people who have a lot, but, you know, I'm grateful every day I wake up to be able to walk. Open my fridge, there's food in there. I have a roof over my head. And, you know, I just don't take life for granted. Several years ago, I lost a best friend of mine at a young age. And, you know, I just try to, you know, any day to be my last day, you know, unfortunately. Yeah. But I just want to be able to lead a good life. And when my time is up, be able to look back and say, you know, I'm proud of myself. And the guy upstairs is proud of me as well.
Yeah, that's good, man. That's a good piece of advice.
Good philosophy to live by, yeah.
So that kind of leads us into, I was already asked that question, like kind of what motivates you. This is the part of the show where we're going to kind of wind down a little bit here and ask some like get some final thoughts from you. And we got to know you a little bit and know you do some traveling and stuff. And do you have any more questions about his job, like what he does, like how that process goes maybe or anything like that?
So I do wonder what kind of...
I don't know what that noise was, but go ahead.
Yeah, okay. So whenever you give a presentation, you typically do it in sort of like an auditorium setting, right? With like either PowerPoint or something. How do you go and set up your presentation? So like how long does it take you, and do you maybe have like specific ones that you may be known for and you share around all over the place? And is there like one that you're famous for that people ask you to come, certain talks people ask you to come give at a bunch of different places? Just what's the process in writing out your presentations?
Great question, Doc. So I'm not famous for any yet. But a lot of my presentations center around financial literacy, and sometimes they may be tweaks to it, just depending on the audience and what the client may want me to touch on. But I always like to start them off, well, before I get into that, I always want to be at least an hour before, just because I'm an on-time person. So let's say if whatever I'm doing is at 3 o'clock, I want to be there at 2 to make sure my technology works, to make sure the room is even unlocked, because I've been in a situation like that where the room I was supposed to be in, the door was still locked. I had to chase down the building people to open up the door and, you know, get set up and just make sure everything is ready and ready to go. Technology's working. I have internet access, whatever the case may be. I always want to do those things first because I want to be prepared. I want to look prepared, and I want to be as professional as possible for the audience, because I don't want anyone to be disappointed with my presentation or be disappointed with the you know, organization that brought in the host and say, who's this guy? He wasn't even ready, or, you know, something's not working. But in the fair opportunity or case that something doesn't work, I got to be able to still be able to deliver if technology goes wrong, because as you know, technology goes wrong sometimes. So I'm comfortable and confident in myself that if the technology wasn't working, I can pivot and still be able to, you know, make things happen. And I always also like to always, you know, introduce myself with showing some pictures of my travels, because sometimes audiences that I'm in front of, they may not get to travel. They may have not been out the country before. So I want to show them like, hey, here's some things that I've been able to do in my life. And I show them fun stuff and all that stuff and let them know, hey, I'm a regular person just like you. You know, I like to, you know, snowboard. I like to, I've been skydiving and stuff like that. So I like to share those little fun tidbits with my audience as well before I, you know, dive into the topic at hand.
Yeah. So, wow, that's a really cool process. Like, you just, to be prepared for stuff is like the most essential thing. And like, just showing up is a big part of that too, you know?
Absolutely.
I got to give a note to our producer right now, because we're going to skip that next segment and we're going to wrap up here because we're kind of a little pressed for time here. So, Doc, you're going to go ahead and ask the last few questions there, okay?
Okay, yeah. So is it last word or just the
last word, yeah.
All right. So, with all the things that you know now and all that you've accomplished, all the places you've been and all that you've ever done, what is the one thing that you wish you could go back and say to your younger self?
That's a good one.
Great question. I would say purchase Amazon and Google stock. That's good. So sorry, but yeah. That's what I was my younger self.
And then Apple too, right?
Yeah, Apple.
Yeah, that one came out of nowhere. Like, everyone's like, what's Apple? And like, Windows is going to be it. And then Apple went, boom, iPhone, iPods, you know, all that stuff. So that's good.
Yeah.
Well, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much, Mr. Williams, for being our guest on our show. And we would like to sign off here. And because we do this all the time, we just thank you so much for you, all you're doing, and your willingness to come on the show. And for those of you out there, my name is Crazy Jay.
And I'm Doc.
And this is Youth Worst Chronicles. And we were joined today here by Mr. Williams and signing off. Do you have anything you want to promote? Like, do you have any kind of like books or anything that you got or?
No, I don't have anything to promote, but I want to say happy holidays to your audience. And thank you so much for having me. And I wish everyone a great rest of your year. And let's get ready to take 2025 by storm.
Let's go. All right. Once again, I'm Crazy Jay and this is Doc. Thanks for listening.
Are you ready? We're not the Dutch rags, 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 rags.